Welcome to the Health Tips Podcast. The Health Tips Podcast is all about fitting in fitness in a busy schedule. Dr. Mukesh Batra has a storytelling life, a fourth-generation homeopath. He started with a very small clinic in Mumbai and is today the founder of Dr. Batra's Positive Health Clinic with hundreds of clinics around the world. The doctor, the entrepreneur, the philanthropist. I present to you the second part of my conversation with Dr. Mukesh Batra. To hear the first part, click on the link on the screen or go to http://tandurust.podomatic.com. You can also find it by Googling the Health Tips Podcast.
Then your body becomes alkaline over a period of time, and that's how you then actually stay fit and you are always in your right, the right size, if I may say so. Similarly, I think what's also very important is that you don't eat at night because you allow your gut a 12 hours. So like I say, you know, certain religions, they do roza. Now they do it 1 month in a year. Other religions like, you know, Jainism, they do Paryushan, which again they do 10 days or 15 days in a year. What I am doing is every day I'm having a 14 days fast because I have my dinner at 5:30 or 7:30 latest, and I have my breakfast at 7:30 in the morning. Wow. So I have a 12 hour to 14 hour where my gut does not work. I mean, I can't say I'm gutless, but it's the time when my gut is not totally active, it gets time to rest. So which is why then the digestion is good, the absorption is good, the fitness is good, the activity level is very high. So that's what I would recommend. The last thing I think which is very important is that I sleep very well. And I think sleep is, today a lot of us are sleep deprived. I mean, if you actually look at statistics all over the world and also in India, today, because we are working so hard, and today we have so much of, like, you know, digital, you know, addiction to digital devices. Looking at our, I mean, we spend almost an average person all over the world today spends 2 to 3 hours on his digital device, whether it's an iPad or music or movie or internet or whatever, you know, or answering emails. Now, you know, that's really your free time, because, I mean, just think of it takes you 2 hours to eat, you know. And one thing that I do and which I've learned recently is also that I always chew my food 40 times. So chew is very important, because that's how then you start digesting your food properly. So if you're going to spend 2 hours in eating, and if you're going to spend 8 hours in sleeping, which you should be doing, you know, which you're not doing today, a lot of us are not doing that. And if you're, you know, you really left with 2-3 hours of personal time. So ultimately what really happens is that we are then compromising on our sleep. And then the best sleep, which is the REM sleep, actually comes between 10 o'clock and 4 o'clock. You know. And also your mind is to take creative decisions is the most active between 6 o'clock and 4 o'clock. So you'll find that your level of activity, now they all scientifically prove facts where, you know, research is done. So therefore, really, if you want to keep fit, you should have a good breakfast, a good lunch. You should not have raw foods and foods after 4 o'clock in the evening. We always think salad is healthy and we should have it at night. We should not, because then it puts a lot of effort on your stomach to digest. You know, we should have an early dinner. Okay, we should sleep well and we should exercise moderately.
That's a lot of amazing advice. Considering the amount of stress you have taken in your life, how is the best way to handle mental health?
So I think I'd like to answer this in two separate parts. We are in Dubai and we are now going to start Abu Dhabi within this month, and we're also starting Bahrain this month. So yes, we are in the Gulf, and you know, the same logic applies there as well. And of course, we're also in London, we're also in Bangladesh. So we are in a few countries. I think the point that you raise about mental health is a very, very valid point. It's very, very serious. Is that we don't realize it, because what happens is that there are a lot of symptoms, physical symptoms which people feel, and therefore they take help. When they have mental symptoms or mental health symptoms, they don't recognize it, and therefore they don't ask for help. And I think we need to credit a Bangalorean, Deepika Padukone, for bringing this into public knowledge and in mainstream and for the media as well, so that there's a lot of education and awareness that is happening in this field. So the first thing is to recognize it. I think when we feel low, when we are depressed, when we don't talk to people, when we withdrawal from social life, withdrawal from active life, all of these are actually signs and symptoms of depression. You know, like that we get symptoms of anxiety, we get butterflies in our stomach. You know, they say the stomach is the sounding board of human emotions. So, but we don't recognize it. We say, oh, stomach is bad. We don't realize that it's a stress or an anxiety. And similarly, I'm saying I can name you 100 diseases, whether it's a backache or a headache or a migraine, which actually get precipitated by stress. So stress is actually a killer today. And the way we lead our lives, if we don't realize it, lots of problems today are psychosomatic, and they originate from stress. Now, as a homeopath, one of the biggest advantages of homeopathy is to treat these kind of problems because you don't treat them separately. We practice holistic medicine. And homeopathic medicine is also proved on healthy human beings, which also give out mental symptoms. So when you treat homeopathy, it's a combination of physical and emotional symptoms. We actually take in symptoms and we have different drugs for people who, for example, say, I'm feeling depressed. And if I'm feeling depressed, if I'm feeling sad, it's another medicine, like Natromure. Or if I'm depressed and I'm feeling very withdrawn, then it could be a medicine like Ignatia. So there are different kind of medicines for different types of depression, different types of reactions to stress, you know, all of them. So it's a very personalized thing and it's a very holistic treatment, which is why it works very well in such cases. So rather than, you know, taking antidepressants and rather than taking anti-anxiety medicines, a lot of which have dependency factors because you get hooked onto them for life, and they also have side effects over a period of time. So homeopathy, I always say, safe as a year. So, and enough clinical research has been done all over the world to prove that. So it actually works very well in case of anxiety and depression, and according to me, it should be the treatment of choice and the treatment of first choice. Now coming to your second question, which is about how do I stay away from stress, having started 225 clinics in different countries and all that. I think the first thing is I enjoy my work. I mean, I've just landed straight from the airport. My flight was 2 hours late. I've come straight away. I've started working. I go straight from, I mean, I landed at 6 o'clock in the morning in London, and I went to BBC studios at 8 o'clock straight from the airport. So I'm used to it and I love my work. So because I love my work and because I'm very passionate about it, I don't find it stressful at all.
But there must be times, I'm sure, you know, considering the Indian legal system, the Indian, government system, where you must be getting occasionally in your life frustrated or, you know, tired of the way things are moving.
I never get frustrated. I never get tired. Okay, because if you do that, then that's not a sign of good leadership. Okay? I mean, a good leader makes sure that he takes everything on heads on. Well, of course, there are problems. I mean, there are a million problems, not one. There are a million problems. When you're a trailblazer, people say you got, you know, first mover advantage. I say it's a first mover disadvantage. Right. Okay, because we actually, and that's what we learn in management schools. Mm. And I'm saying it's totally wrong. It's actually against, because we do all the hard work. Mm. I mean, just to let you know, sometimes it takes me 3 years to get a license, medical license to practice, not for me, but for my company. Company license you get immediately, but to get the health license to practice for my doctors, it takes 3 years. For 3 years, I have to make investments, and nobody knows what are the rules because you're the first corporate entering a country. You know, they don't even have homeopathy there, so they don't know how to judge it or how to perform, you know, what to tell you, what to do. So everything is trial and error. So obviously in all of this, there is a certain amount of stress, there is a certain amount of frustration, there's a certain amount of, a lot of money gets lost. But so what? It's all part of entrepreneurship. It doesn't bother me, you know. I mean, I always believe in this, you know, people who fail are people who give up early and people who don't try hard enough. So my philosophy has always been, lage raho munna bhai. It doesn't happen today, it'll happen tomorrow. But if you give it up, it'll never happen at all. So pursuing something with passion doesn't cause me any stress, because I know I'm going to get there. I'm an optimistic. I mean, I've had tons of problems in my life, not one or two, but many, many, many. And it's bound to happen. But I don't allow it to affect me. And even if it does, it's for a very small time. You know, I mean, today I may feel bad, then tomorrow I'm perfectly fine. I go and go on to the next, and then to the next, and then to the next.
So, if I may ask you, would you like to know better as a doctor entrepreneur or the entrepreneur doctor?
Well, honestly and frankly, as both. My passion was for medicine, and my passion is for healing. So, you know, like I told you, that I gave up a very good academic job, and I stood by the bedside of my patient so that I could learn from them, I could heal people. So obviously that's my calling, and that's something which is close to my heart. But I'm very proud of the fact as well, equally proud of the fact, that when I used to treat patients, I used to treat 300 patients a day, and I could reach out to, you know, maybe 3,000 people in a month, you know, in that sense, counting weekend holidays and all that. Today we are treating more than 140,000 patients every month. So look at the reach that has happened. And so it makes me equally proud of the fact that we are still getting a 93 or 96% cure rate as authenticated by an American company. And we are able to expand our reach from 3,000 people to more than 100,000 people. So that also makes me feel very happy. And again, I just want to mention here, since you asked this question, is that I have two big aims in my life as far as profession is concerned, not personal life. Personal life is different. And, you know, people talk about profitability, they talk about bottom line, they talk about EBITDAs, they talk about all of that. Of course, that's important because you have to run a profitable organization. You can't sustain it. I mean, you have to have sustainability, you have to have scalability in everything that you do, which is also why we've been able to scale mainly through internal accruals from one clinic to 225 or 230 clinics where we are today. So obviously that is true. But having said that, the two big things that I'm looking at, one is reach and the second is impact. So my doctors are trained that they must see more and more patients, but the moment the numbers exceed, then you get another doctor. So we have to have reach. We have to get to more people. Homeopathy is practiced in 86 countries of the world legally. Today, we are in only 4 countries of the world. So what a long way to go. Mm. You know, the woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have many promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep and miles to go before I sleep. So that's a long journey. So we are just taking a few baby steps right now. There's a lot more to do. So the two things that I focus on as cornerstones of what we should be doing in our company. Point number one is reach, and the second is impact. So how many people can we reach, number one? And number two, have we impacted or changed your lives? Healing people, changing lives is our byline. And that's the philosophy. So, and can we actually, you know, give happiness through good health is what we're actually doing. We're actually spreading, because if somebody is sick, then the caretaker is also stressed out. If somebody is healthy, then the caretaker also gets enough time to lead their own life. I mean, I've seen so many girls not being married because there's an old father or old mother who's bedridden and they're taken care of. I've seen so many parents who have no life because they have a disadvantaged child whom they have to take care of. So it actually, you know, disturbs everybody around. And health is no longer a personal thing. If you are unwell, then your family also suffers with you equally. Mm. Of course, you get the pain, but somebody else also gets the suffering. Mm. So impact is very important. And the last point that I want to say is that I'm very proud of the fact that with whatever I've done in the last 17 years since I've set up a corporate, or 16 years since I've set up a company, I'm very proud of the fact that I've made sure that we are instilling very strong value system in the organization. So there's something which I call the purity of the revenue stream. So all doctors have to ask that question. That from where are you collecting money? You're collecting from your patients. Does he really need it? Is he going to benefit? And what is going to be the impact on his life? And if yes, then you take him as a patient. If no, please don't take him. Even today, only 50% of all people who come to the clinic actually join. So just to give you an idea, so that's, you know...
So how do you deal with, I have to ask you this question, how do you deal with criticism of homeopathy? How do you answer that?
First of all, I think you actually develop a thick skin after some time, honestly. And you don't get bothered by it. But as doctors, we are always sensitive people and we have a lot of humanness in us. So at some stage, yes, it does bother you. But as far as your system is concerned, you know that you're sitting on a very strong system of medicine. So if anybody's trying to criticize homeopathy, there's enough research that is being done to show it actually works. I mean, we have tens of thousands of cases that we have cured. So we know that we are doing the right thing. So why should we worry about what everybody else is saying? And ultimately, I'm saying the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And anybody who's experienced it, not just through us, but through any other doctor or through any other homeopath, you know, they are spellbound into carrying on homeopathic treatment for life or for, you know, whenever they need it. So I think ultimately the faith that you're doing the right thing and that truth will always prevail is something that you ride and it doesn't bother you.
Perfect. I think that the proof is in the pudding is I think a major is an important thing to talk about. One question, you know, you've had all this experience in your life. Is there something which if you were talking to a 25-year-old you, looking back, what would you like to tell him, or what advice or wisdom would you like to give him, which you know today, which you would have liked to know that day?
Don't be so stupid. I mean, that's easily said than done, but I think we all make mistakes in life, and I think we've all learned from our mistakes, and you know, failures are really the stepping stone to success. When I was 60, which is like, you know, almost 7 years ago, I did a course in medical excellence in Harvard. One of the great things that I learned, I was the oldest student there, one of the greatest things that I learned there was that pharma companies actually give failure parties. So you fail early to succeed later. So failure is, don't get disappointed by failure. So when I was young, I failed, but then I got worried about it. I got disappointed, but I never gave up, which was good. And I still think that a lot of people actually give up and they then, change track, and then they get worried, and then they think, no, this is not the right thing for me. I'm saying today you look at how many people are there, young people, who have changed so many businesses, so many professions, they keep, wavering. I'm saying having a goal in life and sticking to it and then making sure that you get there. You know, perseverance, they say, is the key to success. So persevering and carrying on with what you think is right and believing in it very strongly will actually get you there.
But was there ever a moment in your life where you felt that you doubted your success or the path that you were on?
No, never. Doubts, yes, but never a lack of conviction. So I'm saying, and none of the things that I've done have actually been planned. Now, of course, we are a corporate and we have 5-year plans and we have all of that, like any other company. But when I started as a doctor, I started my company, I mean, I just went along. I think the biggest thing is, that two things I would like to say as an entrepreneur. Point number one is that you must look out for opportunities, and you must see how can you use them, to your advantage. I think that is something which a lot of people don't do. I mean, you see an opportunity and then you don't do it. I'm saying today, a lot of businesses coming even from Kabul. Can you imagine that Kabul has got the highest, there's all insurgency there. But I was just told that the per capita spending that they do on healthcare is higher than any other country. So that's an opportunity. I mean, I won't go there. But if somebody is willing to go, why not? I'm just saying, so always, as long as you keep looking at opportunities, that's one thing that will get you where you want to be. Point number two is focus. I find today a lot of us don't focus. We want to do too many things. So one thing is take opportunities. And the second thing is learn when to say no and learn where to stop. Learn what you should not be doing. I mean, don't allow your core expertise to get diluted because you're doing 500 things. Focus on your core and then grow it to the skies.
How do you define core?
Core is what your calling is and what you're good at doing. Not necessarily what you're trained at doing. So sometimes you may be trained to be an engineer, but you can be a radio jockey, you can be a VJ, you can do whatever you like to do, you can be a playwright. So as long as you're good at doing it, so anything that you excel in from your heart is what is your core.
Again, that's good advice. Before we did this interview, we sent out a message that we were going to talk to you, and we got quite a few questions. So I'm going to take three questions because, which I feel would be good. And one of the questions related to health. So the first question came from somebody in America. He's a pilot. His name is Captain Dan. And he asks, what does Dr. Batra see as the best cancer cure outside of traditional medicine? And for what types of cancer can it work best?
Okay, now that's really very, very difficult, Dan, to answer on a podcast. Because there are so many types of cancers and, the prognosis of every type of cancer is different. So while some can be easily cured and treated, others can't. For some, there is a lot of cure and there, a lot of very good results in modern medicine. And for others, it is not. So all that I would say is, yes, there are clinical trials in homeopathy where certain type of cancers do get cured. And even we have done that in our clinics as well. Having said that, we can't claim a cure for cancer at all. And certainly there's a very, very good palliation and there's a very good supportive treatment for cancer patients through homeopathy. So when you're using, say, radiotherapy, when you're using chemotherapy, you can actually use homeopathy very powerfully and very strongly to make sure the side effects get diminished. And also you can use homeopathy for palliative care. There's so many people who get so many side effects from all these, traditional treatments that are there. Sometimes it's better to relieve pain naturally with natural medicine like homeopathy, rather than put them to drugs which are actually cause more harm than the good that they can cause.
Okay. A second question comes from a lady in Bangalore, and she wants to know whether there are medicines for hair follicles apart from biotin.
Well, biotin is, just a mineral which actually is good for hair. But as you know, hair is a protein. And just to let you know that, there are very, very many causes for hair loss. And I would, just say one thing, that's not a cosmetic problem and it's a medical problem. So just to let you know that, the fundamental reasons for hair loss are more than 40 medical reasons. I just want to give you one example as a woman, she's a lady who's asking a question. So I'm talking about female hair loss now. and answering that question, you know, with that focus. So if you look at it in India, for example, the three commonest reasons for women to lose hair. Number one is anemia. You know, today's Karwa Chauth, a lot of women are fasting. So, you know, this whole thing of fasting, either for religious purposes or for looking good and going to extremes, is something which, research has shown, for example, that in the big metros, 60% of women are anemic. So lack of iron and lack of absorption of iron, I'm not going into details of that, but that, you know, is one fundamental reason in women. So if you correct it, within 3 months, you get your hair back. It's as simple as that, or your hair loss stops. Okay. Similarly, the second thing is thyroid. Lots of women who have thyroid and endocrinal problems, they suffer from hair loss. The third is polycystic ovaries, so PCOD. So we see a lot of young girls today coming where their, you know, hair is thinning. You get that Christmas tree pattern, you know, where the hair thins, looks like a Christmas tree on the scalp. A little bit of hair on the chin, period irregularities. And when you do a sonography, you find that they've got cysts in the ovary. So unless you treat the cysts, your hair falling is not going to stop. So I'm just giving you these examples that a lot of it is to do with medicine, a lot of it is to do with some medical problems that you have. And just like how the skin is a mirror of your good health, so is hair also a mirror of your good health. So if your hair is falling unnaturally and abnormally, and having said that, a certain amount of hair fall is normal because it falls and grows in cycles. Okay? If it's falling abnormally, then maybe something's wrong with you and you need to go to a doctor and get it checked.
Which they can come to Dr. Batra's Positive Health Clinic too.
They are most welcome.
Okay, the last question, since we're almost run out of time, is I'll just take this last one. Is a lady wants to know, why is abdominal distension so common and what are the reasons and remedies?
I suppose you're actually talking about fat accumulation on the abdomen more than distension. Distension, of course, can be because of fat flatulence. It can be because of not eating food properly. But abdomen is the part where all of us put up weight, mainly because we don't exercise. So all the fat actually accumulates in the abdomen. So unless you diet and unless you exercise, it will not go.
Okay. That was a great conversation. Any future plans? Any talk about what future plans you have?
Well, certainly we have, three basic, thoughts in the profession. Number one is that we want to still grow more clinics. And a lot of the expansion that we're going to have is going to be international. Like I said, we're only in 4 or 5 countries. We want to go to all the countries if we can, and maybe introduce homeopathy in many more countries. So that's a passion and that's a drive, and that's going to continue, till my last breath to make that happen. The second, of course, is we've launched a product range 2.5 years ago, and we are now in 6,000 outlets in India. And we hope that in the next 2 years, we will take it to about 100,000 outlets. So, and also then take it abroad. So these are really the two, I would say business ideas that we have. Other than that, of course, I'm very happy, doing my photography, singing, doing a lot of charity work for my foundation. We are now running more than 175 free clinics. Last year, we fed 100,000 children and gave them midday meals totally free of charge as part of our activation. We are running a free clinic in Bombay totally separately with the Rotary Club of Bombay. So there are lots of such things, and I propose to actually, continue doing a lot more of that. So get more into charity and reach out to many, many more people who can't afford medical treatment, and see how I can make medical treatment more accessible to people all over the world.
Wow. Thank you, Dr. Batra. That was absolutely amazing and so inspiring to hear. I think a lot of people are going to really learn a lot from this, apart from health, but also to be a lovely human being like you are. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's so lovely talking to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Batra. That was such an amazing conversation. To make sure you catch part one, follow us on Twitter at The Health Tips Radio, on iTunes or at tandrust.podomatic.com. And thank you, Atharva Marcom, India's leading public relations firm, for all the support. They have a simple tagline: we make you famous. Reach out to them at atharvamarcom@gmail.com. That's atharvamarcom@gmail.com, or at +91 9901 742 544. If you like this, you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can reach out to us by email at tandrust@gmail.com. Stay healthy, keep moving.